Welcome to Walking in Faith, featuring interviews and reviews that help you rediscover the Catholic faith in our culture. And now here is your host, Barbara Schenkel.
Thank you for joining us with Walking in Faith. Today we have two guests, Evelyn Walsh. She's the director of the Rachel's Vineyard Retreat at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa in Doylestown. Also joining us today is Victoria Nowy, and she's here with Silent No More. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
This is such a great topic that we're talking about this morning because so many people are thinking right now, as we have a new administration in Washington, about what happens with regards to taxpayer funding on abortions and all sorts of things. We're here to discuss so many issues. But I want to just start with healing, first of all. And let's talk about the ministry that you have for women who've undergone abortions and how they can seek healing through a retreat. Tell us a little bit about that, Evelyn.
I'd be happy to. So Rachel's Vineyard is an extraordinary opportunity for any person who struggles with emotional and spiritual pain of past abortions. The weekend is a unique and effective process designed specifically to help you experience the mercy and compassion of God. There are many exercises to help you grieve your loss and an opportunity to understand and release the deep feelings of anger, shame, guilt, and grief that frequently accompanies an abortion experience. This process is extremely helpful for those who struggle with forgiving themselves or others. The weekend will help you find your soul, help your soul find a voice and transform the pain of the past into hope. And Rachel's Vineyard is a therapy for the soul which combines a unique and creative process for psychological and spiritual healing. And I wanted to mention it's not only for the woman or the mother or the father, the woman or the men who have had this abortion experience, but it's also for the shockwaves. You know, as Father Frank Pavone and Priests for Life explain this, is that everyone has been touched by this experience, whether you're a grandparent who has lost a child to this experience, this abortion experience. And sometimes family members will insist that their daughter, you know, parents will say, well, you have to have this. And then they end up grieving that decision and that loss later in life. They all think it's an appropriate decision at the time. And they end up rethinking that over time with their grief and their loss. And sometimes we have siblings come. You know, someone will find out later in life that, oh my goodness, my parents decided to abort their first child, who would have been my brother or sister. So they are also welcome to come to this retreat as well.
Talk a little bit about the signs that you may be experiencing if you have had an abortion, and that maybe these aren't obvious, mm-hmm. but it's something that could possibly crop up, and you wouldn't know why you're doing this, and maybe this might be an indicator that you need to seek some help.
Right. There's something called post-abortive syndrome symptoms, and these things can pop up for any reason at all in your life, but very often when someone calls me to register for the retreat, I'll check in with them and I'll ask them, is there any sort of addictive behavior that exists in your life? You know, has drugs or alcohol been a problem for you? Perhaps gambling, pornography is a very common one, especially for men, you know, and then they tend to have anger issues and so on. And the women do too. But guilt, shame, self-loathing, what else? The depression, anxiety, and it's just, there's
such Victoria
a
wide... Victoria is chiming in here. You're saying suicide.
Suicidal.
Yeah.
Suicidal.
Exactly.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, and let's bring you in, Victoria, and maybe we can tell a little bit about why you're here and what your testimony is with regards to this issue.
Well, I'm affiliated with Silent No More, Pennsylvania's for Human Life League, and also Rachel's Vineyard Ministries. I'm post-abortive of over 40 years. And the symptoms that Evelyn is talking about are all the things that I've went through, in addition to drugs, sex, alcohol. We try to numb the pain And not realizing that no matter how hard we try, that pain still comes back every day. So one of the things that now my children have a voice. So I made a commitment to Jesus that I would speak the truth to whoever, wherever, and whomever. So the truth has to be told, because the truth, Jesus said, will set you free.
It's a tough subject for many women to really come to grips with. I think because in 1973 abortion was made legal, there is a sense in someone's heart that if it's legal, then it must be okay.
Right.
And we did not have the science that we've recently been able to unveil and unmask with regards to ultrasounds and all that we know with regards to the development of the gestational baby in the womb. So that women who might have thought this was just a blob of tissues, as you're saying, 40 years ago or something, and now they're seeing the ultrasound pictures of maybe their first grandchild or understanding that this really was something much more significant than they were led to believe. Do you have a sense that this is an important thing for women to really start to put their hands around and grasp? Because as much as you want to run away from it, it won't let you go.
Correct. I know back when I had my abortions, we didn't have, like you were talking about, we didn't have the technology that we have today. And we are told that it's a blob of tissue. The thing that I question a lot of times is Planned Parenthood, the name Planned Parenthood. They don't help you plan for parenthood.
Well, really, in any abortion provider, because we are now dealing with the Gosnell fallout. He's now in jail. Our listeners are aware of the fact that he had the clinic in, not really a clinic, I don't know what you would call it, a house of horrors in Philadelphia, where a very racist attitude prevailed in his business, where if you were a black woman, you got sent to the dirtier facilities, and if you came from the suburbs and had a different race, you had a better facility. It was just horrible what was going on there. So Planned Parenthood, we're all really talking about all abortion providers.
Correct.
And I want to talk to both of you ladies about this, because we've had this Women's March recently. And I think the thing that was most shocking for many of us in faith was to see people with I Heart Abortion on their shirts, and this militantism about the very fact that everything that screams out to be a woman is to protect and preserve her child and her children. It just seemed to be totally lost at these marches.
I have a feeling that they really don't understand what abortion is. If they can stand there with a sign such as that, they can't possibly know. Or there's a part of themselves that have just died, you know, to not recognize that that's a human life. That is a baby. There's no doubt about that. I understand, you know, they have some certain aspects that you can, any woman would agree with, but when it comes to abortion, that's when I was completely lost on that
big separation.
Group. Yeah.
Yeah, I was offended, actually, by their behavior. You know, us pro-lifers, we protest in peace, because that same weekend, I think it was that same weekend, the March for Life, or the following weekend, was the March for Life. So, and the contrast between both of them, like, you know, they wanted to make a point. They made their point in violence and hostility. We made our point, the March for Life, in peaceful protest. So, and then yet we don't get any type of coverage.
And don't you feel the relief for these women? Because I think their hearts really are in the right place. They've just not been educated. And I don't mean to say that in a way that's sort of like speaking down. It's really the matter of the truth being obscured. I think there's the radical feminism that has prevailed that says that somehow if you're a woman, you're inferior, and we have to fight that with every tooth and nail that we have, that if somehow the ability to reproduce and have a baby growing within you is somehow enslavement to some women. I mean, you've seen these theories, you've read about them, that this is pervasive amongst certain women. I don't know where this starts or how it permeates, but I really do feel like there has to be a message that can ring through to these women. Maybe you can talk about your own sense of why you chose abortion at the time. I know you know, there's so many different reasons women choose it, but our heart goes really out to these women who somehow feel that this is really something they must do, or it's the only option they have.
Well, with me, we're talking like Ancient of Days. It wasn't long after Roe v. Wade. So really, that was, I guess, I don't know if that was the up and coming thing. I'm not really sure. I don't really recall. But I had gotten pregnant. I had a daughter first, and then I got pregnant again by my husband, and we had separated. So my girlfriend was the one that talked me into doing it. And she says, oh my gosh, look at your life. It's a mess. You're separated from your husband. You know, you've got a four-year-old child. You know, you're living with your mother. You know, what kind of life is that? So I was very easily influenced. And she kind of like talked me into, and she says, I'll even take you there. So I had my first abortion between 6 and 9 weeks. And I remember coming out of there feeling...
Can I ask you, Victoria, did you think at all about what the procedure was,
No.
or did you just sort of block it out of your mind
No.
in terms of that?
No, I did not. I did not. Back then, that was before I knew God. So I didn't have God in my life. So a lot of times, I think what women do in that situation is our head and our hearts are not in unison.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of like look at it like, oh, it's, you know, I'll just get rid of it. And
it's a problem to be taken care
of. It is, yeah. And then that's what you think. It's like, I can't handle that. You know,
was there ever a point at which you thought, "Gee, this is really bad," but I know there's going to be something I can get through this. I mean, this is something I can't do it on my own, but I can with the help of someone else get through it. Because I'm trying to figure out. I know so many women, and you know too, Evelyn, make the decision out of fear. And I guess you're saying not having God in your life. I mean, that's like the whole practice of our faith is just to know when situations seem impossible, we rely on God. We're on
right.
our knees.
But even if you have God and you've been raised in
Catholic,
with faith or any faith, you know, a Christian background, that moment is so overwhelming to you that
yeah.
all of those good lessons that you might have been taught as a child just fly straight out the window, and you at the moment are just right there. This is going to, like, if you're a college student, let's
mm-hmm.
say,
mm-hmm.
oh my goodness, well, I have to finish school, and then I have this, and then it's all about me and my dreams of where my life is going to be heading to.
Right.
And this is a problem I have to take care of.
Right, right, right.
So
right.
even though they might have been raised from a very great background with family who cared for them and so on, I've seen them still make the decision because of that fear.
Fear and lack of trust.
That's
yeah.
it.
Right.
That's it.
And also self-control, you're saying, right? Really, that I have to take control of this. I have to, this is my problem. I have to solve it. You know, sometimes when we're faced with things that come up in our lives, we don't have the option of solving it. So we learn how to rely on God to get through every day. But in this situation, I see it's like people who just want to say, I need to solve this. I need to take care of it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the three situations with mine, I was told and coerced by the two men in my life and then by my girlfriend. So it was, and a lot of times that happens because what they do is, like Evelyn said, it's at that moment, okay, that we're thinking, it's like, you know, can I go through this? Can I get through this or not? You know, this is going to interfere with this. And when I had my third abortion, what had happened was Michael, who was the father of the child, I was 4 months pregnant, and I was excited about it because I wanted to wait. And he was not. He just like, I can't believe you've done this to me. How could you do this to me? I'm not ready to be a father. You have to take care of the problem. Again, it's a problem. And so he took me to the Planned Parenthood. And I think at that moment, that's when, for me, this
the
is
first
me.
Sense of,
right. For
yeah.
me, this is when God stepped in and, you know, said enough. But I don't know if you wanted me to expound
sure.
on that at all. Okay.
When I went
into the Planned Parenthood, I remember being so nervous. And I remember just my palms sweating. And, you know, you go up there, you give them your name and you give them their money and you wait for your name to be called. Well, when my name was called, they went ahead and the nurse came and she started to escort me. And she kept telling me, she says, oh, honey, this is the best thing you could do for yourself. The doctor's done lots of these procedures. You know, look at the mess you're in. And the big one is it's only a blob of tissue. Now, they may change it as far as now, but that was 40 years ago. And
well, Victoria, let me just stop you right there, because look at the mess you're in, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're not dealing with the mess.
They're
dealing
not.
With the baby, and once that's done, they really don't want to see you again, right?
As, correct.
As composed to a
bigger mess. And they
correct.
We're at like a crisis pregnancy center where a woman is, from the moment she comes in, is counseled and helped and
loved.
Medical. And do you need to get away from your abusive relationship? Do you need money? Do you need a place to stay? Do you, where the woman is really honored,
mm-hmm.
really honored.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's this sense of the baby is honored among pro-life people, but they could care less for the mother. You couldn't make it more opposite, because I've never seen any follow-up for anyone who has been to an abortion mill mm-hmm. as opposed to a crisis pregnancy center, where I've seen women get homes, I've seen women get clothing, I've seen women get medical assistance to
yeah.
take care of long-standing dental problems, mm-hmm. every need that they have.
And they care for the baby with
care
formula,
for the baby,
clothing,
yeah,
the car seat.
They treat the difference between, and like I said before, Planned Parenthood. Okay, think about it. Planned Parenthood. They do not help you to plan for parenthood. They don't even offer prenatal care. So, you know, going to a crisis pregnancy center, if I had someone that had spoken to me back then, or even if the persons at Planned Parenthood had made the suggestion, you know, have you really thought about it? They did not go ahead, and they don't receive a woman with love and tenderness.
And I have to point out, too, ladies, that because of the fact this is an abortion, which is a political issue, a hot button issue, an inviolate right to so many people in a political sphere, that the regulation of these abortion mills are not as well regulated as a hospital. And this is a surgical procedure.
Correct.
So a lot of the times when you women, misfortunately or unfortunately, are taken in, they may not be getting the best medical assistance that they could be getting, depending on where you're going and where they've been regulated. And we see with the Kermit Gosnell how awful that was and how repeatedly it was brought to the attentions of officials who just did not want to go in and slap any kind of fines or restrictions because there was a sacredness of abortion.
Yeah. They ignored it because of the political backlash, which is so unfortunate.
So women were being, well, one woman was killed mm-hmm. and other women were taken to hospitals with, you know, immense bleeding and perforations and all sorts of problems cropping up there.
Mm-hmm.
And in the name of the fact of abortion, we can't even address it from a medical or surgical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not only, I'm pointing out that not only are we talking about the woman not being treated mentally or spiritually, but certainly not even medically sometimes.
Yeah, correct. I mean, there have been situations where ambulances have been called, you know, because these women are bleeding profusely. There have been several women that have died as a result of a legal mm-hmm. abortion done. But I know with me, with my daughter, what had happened was, when they take you back and you go into the procedure room, they give you a drug to help you put you in twilight. So when they administer the drug, I'm waiting for that to take effect. But all the time, it didn't. It never took effect, and that's why I think that's why.
You had clarity.
Yes, I felt everything. So, and I'm begging the nurse, I'm squeezing her hand, and I remember that day, I'm squeezing her hand and begging her, you know, please stop, please help me, please, you don't understand, I'm feeling everything that's going on, please. Crying on the table, and my cries went unanswered. She said, just hang in there, honey. It's not going to be much longer. You know, and what part, and this is another thing, what part of dismembering a baby is natural? What, I just don't understand. What part of sucking a baby through a tube is natural? Can you honestly tell me that that's okay? It's not. I was her mother. My job was to protect her. How did I protect her? You know, babies feel pain as young as 12 weeks. My God, my daughter was 4 months. I can't even grasp the pain that I caused her. And this is a decision that I made 40 years ago that I live with every day. If I can prevent or help someone not go through the pain that I went through, that's good. That's good. But when you hear a pro-choice woman say, well, it's my right to choose. Is my right to choose what? My right to choose to murder your child? Because that's what's happening. You know? So...
What was it that, Victoria, that after you had through that abortion, obviously this was not like the first two.
No.
And there was a real... for lack of a better word,
awakening.
With regards to what this was. How did you then piece everything together, or didn't you? Did it spiral down for worse before you got...
Oh, my gosh. It was like totally. It was like, yeah. Because what happened was, at that moment, after it was... It just stopped. Everything just stopped. And then at that moment, it was like, what did I just do? What did I just do? So after I had left the clinic, you know, my boyfriend and I broke up not long after that. I started to spiral downhill like major big time.
Well, he had threatened he was going to leave if he had the baby.
Correct.
But he left anyway?
Correct. Yes.
That's very common, actually. You know, the man will force the woman into it, and then he's on his way out at that point.
Yep. And so... And I couldn't figure out, it was like, why did I cry at Hallmark commercials? You wanted to see babies. I was depressed, suicidal. I tried numbing the pain because I felt so guilty and so ashamed of what I had done that I wanted to just make the pain go away. And I couldn't, because no matter what I tried, drugs, sex, alcohol, it didn't matter. No matter what I tried, that pain came back the next day. It was there.
It's like a haunting.
It is. Yeah. It's, you know, and you push it back in your mind so that you can get through a day. But, you know, at night, I remember it's just like having dreams and, you know, just nightmares and horrible. And it wasn't until I became a Catholic that when I found God, it was...
How did that happen?
Oh, yeah. Well, at 95, this is a great story. In 95, I met a man by the name of Edgar. He's Filipino and Catholic. So he brought me to a church called St. Augustine's. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's in Philadelphia. Have you ever seen the movie The Sixth Sense? Or you've heard of it?
Isn't that one of the first churches in downtown Philly?
Yes.
Yeah,
it burned down.
I remember
down.
Doing some historic research back there. But yeah. So, okay.
And... So he brought me into that church, and at the moment, and when he brought me in for Sunday, they were singing the Our Father in Tagalog, his language, and it's called the Amin Amin. So that's very special to me and my husband. And when we went in there, it was like I felt and heard in my spirit, God said, "Welcome home, Victoria. I've been waiting for you." And I'm like, "What?" So it was, I converted to Catholicism in 1999. I was baptized, confirmed, and took First Holy Communion on Pentecost Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
But when you, okay, you're in the church now, you feel warm and welcome. Did you have a sense that this, now you're unraveling what happened with regards to the abortion and the effect of it?
It took a little bit, mm-hmm. You know, it took a little bit because I was still not, I mean, I was still.
Well, this shows how deep-rooted it is.
Yeah, I mean, it was.
How hard it is to confront.
Oh yeah, because it was like, we take these feelings and we bury them deep down inside because we don't want anybody to see, okay? It's a secret. And when we do that, it's like everybody will say, "We'll say, how you doing? Oh, yeah, I'm doing great. You know, not a problem."
Is it also, though, ladies, and you can answer this for me because you've counseled so many women, is it also the fact that you really almost can't come to grips with the fact of what you've actually done? When you come to realize it, that you don't even want to admit that you did something like that? That was, yeah. It's such a basic thing for a mother to protect a child that you just can't really want to ever come to grips with what that act was.
That's
was
true. It? And yeah. A mother, you know, that would kill her own child. Those words, those ideas aren't readily available in your mind, but deep down you do know that. And it's very hard to come to grips with that.
So it's wonderful that you're a witness, Victoria, to the gentleness of God and His mercy.
Oh,
that you didn't feel immediately what a bad person you were. You were welcomed into the church, and God gave you your own time to be able to unravel that.
Correct. In God's perfect timing is our peace. So it wasn't until 2004 that I went to a Catholic Unity
Almost
Conference.
Almost 10 years, that's
yeah.
right. Okay.
Catholic Unity Conference. So, you know, decisions that we make younger, okay, we never know what it's going to have an effect, okay, because it has that rippling effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so the choices that I made back then, I didn't know was going to haunt me later on in life.
And you can make an argument from a Catholic theological standpoint that you really did not even commit the mortal sin because you were not aware that it was mm-hmm. gravely evil. It,
right, correct.
But it didn't...
That doesn't
so
matter.
So that argument doesn't... but even though on a legal standpoint, it doesn't matter because you were suffering the effects of it.
Oh my gosh, totally. Yeah. And like I said, it's like... And like Evelyn said, that's true, you know, when we think about that, but we take that, and when those thoughts come up, it's like, no, we bury them. We suppress them.
Right.
Okay, there's like this little secret place that we have in our heads, you know, and I said...
It's too painful?
It is.
Okay.
It is, you know, because it's, I mean, I sit there and I say, well, what's the difference between me and someone who murdered their child? There is technically no difference because it was still a child. She was still a baby. You know, there's no difference whether it's inside the womb or outside the womb. But see, they don't recognize it inside the womb. They only recognize it outside the womb.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2004, I had wound up giving a life confession to a pro-life priest, Father John McFadden. Have you ever heard of
him?
Yes,
he's wonderful.
Oh, my gosh.
Wonderful.
He's like the best thing since sliced bread, I'm telling you. And he told me, he said, I went in there and my soul was scarlet red. So what he told me was, he said, first of all, he said, God's forgiven you. And I'm like, how is that possible? And he told me, he said, if I was the last person on earth, God would have died just for me. That's how much he loves me. To me, when I had confessed all of that, it was like 1,000 pounds were lifted off my shoulders. And we as women, if we're in the faith, we confess that a lot, you know, often. So because we don't think that we're forgiven.
You mean if you've had an abortion, you keep confessing it
correct,
over and over,
okay. and over and over again.
And we should just clarify here with all the confusion with regards to Pope Francis. No. I'm just interjecting here for educational purposes. The church has always allowed priests, at least in the Diocese of Philadelphia, to absolve the sin of abortion. I know there's been some publicity with regards to Pope Francis saying that that was going to be allowed in the Year of Mercy, but it was always in practice here that no woman would ever go into a confessional and not be allowed to confess that and be absolved from that unless the priest determined she was unrepentant. But you wouldn't be in the confessional if you weren't. So I just
correct.
Want to, as a clarification...
There were differences in that around the world, though.
Yes,
because,
there are. Yes,
from the Polish priests that I know, it was explained to me that in their country, you had to go to a bishop, that a local diocesan or parish priest could not.
Yeah. But
so
thank you for pointing that out. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the reason it was. But some people in our own areas here are right. thinking that the church is just so rigid with this, and that a woman's never allowed to come into church, and that there's such a harsh ramification of her trying to seek this mercy of God. No, really, it couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah.
I just want to update our listeners. We're speaking with Evelyn Walsh, the director of Rachel's Vineyards Retreats at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa, and Victoria Nowy, who is representing Silent No More. And in case you're listening, we're talking about the very sensitive subject of a woman's right to choose and what that ramification really means in terms of actual personal testimony as it played out in Victoria's life. You were talking about the idea how beautiful it was to hear that God loved you once you had made this confession.
Well, it was. I grew up without a father. So my father literally dropped dead when I was 5. So growing up and not having the love of a father, I've always wished for that. So when Father McFadden said, you have a father in heaven who loves you and who forgives you, I'm like, how is that possible? How is that possible? So it was like so wonderful to hear that and to know that. And
Victoria, we were talking before we went on air about how one of the most predominant messages I felt when praying at an abortion clinic was to let women know they were loved.
Yes.
Rather than getting on a bullhorn and telling them how, whatever, that they need to reconsider their choice. That I really do you think this is one of the things, and you see this at the retreats, that we're suffering from a lack of love. There's a loneliness, there's an ache, there's a hurt in our lives that we're seeking in relationships that aren't necessarily there to fulfill that, and then it ends up with pregnancy, let's say a hookup or an abusive relationship, or just finding the wrong person that's not going to take responsibility. And these women just keep magnifying that loss and that loneliness.
They do. Yes, they do. And to go back to the point we were discussing about the bullhorns, and there was a time when people who were very strong about their feelings of saving those babies and being pro-life, they had an aspect of the screaming and yelling in their face was really sending these poor people in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And we've had retreatants tell us, it's like, you know, if they had just extended a loving hand to
right.
me or something,
right.
I wouldn't have made that decision. But I was running away from them.
Right.
And so that's, I think much of that has changed.
No, but it's good to note for anyone who's considering that it, when you let the anger and you start speaking or yelling into a bullhorn, it really never is an effective communication. I mean, no one ever reacts well to having somebody angrily say something to them.
No, that's true. And I know in my situation, like I said, if somebody had reached out at that point, you know, instead of coercing me, if they had chosen the love, because God is love. We're all created in His image and likeness. And if we extend, like Evelyn said, if we extend to them, it's like, because it's the last resort, okay? You know, we don't know where to go. We don't know what's been going on in those people's shoes, okay? So if we extend to them, you know, we love you, we can help you in a loving, calm manner, then there's more of a chance of them being, you know, of listening and hearing that. Mm. So I think it's really important for all of those that go out to Planned Parenthoods. You know, the saying is you can attract bees with honey more than you can with vinegar.
Right.
So it means that if you can make, even though the choice that they're making and the decision that they're making is wrong, if we can extend that olive branch, mm-hmm. so to speak, mm-hmm. In love and in gentleness.
Love and mercy of God.
Correct,
yeah.
Correct. And let them
let's
know.
Let's talk a little bit. I'm kind of going in different directions. I want to address prayer because that is a huge component of the 40 Days for Life. But I also want to talk a little bit about how Rachel's Vineyard Retreats work. Mm-hmm. So you're at a point where you've made your confession. How important was it? I don't know if you made the retreat. I'm assuming you did. How important was that, even despite the fact that you felt the forgiveness of God, to actually attend this retreat? And what benefit did it get?
Well, Father McFadden was the one that told me, he says, oh, you need more healing. I'm like, okay. He says, you need to attend the Rachel's Vineyard Retreat. I'm like, okay. So I attended mine in March of 2005. And it was there because it's more intimate. Not that I'm saying that with Father McFadden it wasn't, but this was more addressing the whole situation.
You need time,
as a whole.
I would imagine the weekend.
Correct.
It gives you some time to really ponder and think.
It does. And so one of the things that I found there was that I wasn't the only one.
Mm, wonderful.
There were other women that had gone through the same thing I was going through. I didn't know that. You know, because again, like I said, you know, we suppress the feelings. We don't let anybody know, you know, because of the guilt and the shame. So knowing that there were other people, other women that were going through the same thing that I was going through, that kind of like also helped, because it helped us to open up a little bit more, because we were all suffering in silence for so many years. And the retreat was absolutely amazing. One of the things that they do is when you first get there, you have a meal, you break bread together to get to know everybody. And then you go into a conference room, and on the table, they have all these stones. So I'm like, what is that? So everybody had to pick a stone. So go figure. You know, me, I had the biggest stone. Why not?
You do everything big.
I do. So what that stone represented, it represented all the burdens that we were carrying, all the guilt and the shame, everything that we were carrying for all those years. And we had to take that to bed with us, to lunch with us, to shower, to dinner. So that had to be with us, because think about it. The burdens that we are carrying, they don't get lifted. We carry them. We take them everywhere, don't we? Mm-hmm. To eat, to drink, to sleep, right? And it wasn't until at the end of the retreat when we had a mass for our children. And our children were acknowledged. They were each given a certificate of life. So the thing is, they were recognized as children. And so at the Mass, which was so beautiful, so beautiful, we give our children to Jesus. Mm. We've already gone through the whole, when we went through the retreat, we baptized our children, which was wonderful. We spiritually baptized them. And so at the end, we handed them over to Jesus. And I got an angel and a rose in replace of my rock, because I'm no longer carrying the burden. I've cast it on Jesus. So, and we have to write a letter to our children, and we have to read it out loud. And that was really difficult. That was really difficult. But, by his stripes, you will be healed. Mm. So I know that I've been healed from the wounds of abortion. I know that, because if I wasn't, I wouldn't be able to give witness, and I wouldn't be able to give testimony. My children's names are Matthew, Thomas, and Catherine. And my oldest daughter is Teresa. And you have a picture of St. Catherine. Well, I was asking God, I said, Catherine, like, because you're spelling her with a K, what Catherine are you talking about? So it was a few years back, I went to the St. Catherine Drexel Shrine. Mm. St. Catherine Drexel died in 1955. That was the year I was born. St. Catherine Drexel took care of Black and American Indian children. And Catherine's father was an American Indian. So I know that was the right Catherine, and I know, you know, when we ask God for a sign, he'll give it to us. So in his love and mercy, he's given me a gift. He knew I aborted two sons and a daughter, and he gave me three grandchildren, two grandsons and a granddaughter. Mm. And now I'm a great-grandmother of two great-grandsons.
So, but more importantly, Victoria, you are transformed because you're not thinking about yourself. You're using every energy I can see to help other women, and you're turning this into something to help other people. So it's so selfless, and it's such a wonderful testimony.
Thank you.
To the beauty of God's grace working in you.
Oh, his mercy endures forever. Amen. Amen.
That's something. You know, that is an amazing, amazing story.
Thank you. You know, it. Women have to understand, you know, that what they've done is wrong, but we have a Father in heaven who loves us. All he asks us is to come to him. That's all he wants. Come to me. You know, I'll take that burden from you. You don't have to carry it. I died for you. I love you that much. And to try to go ahead and make women understand that, you know, to, again, extend that olive branch and let them know that they're loved and that they can be forgiven. They don't have to do that. You know, let me show you something else. Why don't you think about adoption? Because there's so many women that can't have children, you know. think about adoption.
I must tell you a beautiful story from the Bucks County Women's Center. It was a couple looking for a baby for 7 years, and on Christmas Eve, a woman gave birth, Christiana, and was given up to this couple.
Oh, praise
God. So what
a
wonderful Christmas present that was. And again, that's a selfless act of a mother to say, I know that someone else can care for this child so much better than I can right now, and I want her to have the best life possible. So you're right. This idea that there's no options, you know, the love that comes forth with the self-sacrifice of delivering the baby and the even bigger sacrifice of giving it over is just a continuous act of love that affects so many people.
Sure.
I want to ask you to please give us a website or a phone number or the dates of an upcoming Rachel's Vineyard retreat if there's anyone that would like more information, or if they are interested in perhaps distributing pamphlets in their parish. Can you?
Well, they can contact me, Evelyn Walsh. It's evelynwalsh59@gmail.com. I'd be happy to talk to anybody who's interested in either helping with the retreat, or if you know of someone that would like to register, that person has to contact me directly. I mean, this has to be their decision, and it's their time. I've heard of people see the information in
and
a bulletin,
get,
like for 5 years, stick it in a drawer, and then, oh, now I'm ready. So
good.
No
yeah.
one could, you have to be completely deciding upon this on your own, that it's time for you to come to the retreat. So at Our Lady of Częstochowa in Doylestown, we have a retreat coming up April 7th, 8th, and 9th, 2017. We do have another one in September, 22nd to the 24th. This retreat in April is, we're about 3/4 of the way full at this point, but I'm happy to have anyone give me a call and sign up for it.
I have to plug the retreat center there at the National Shrine. It's just a most beautiful place to take a
retreat.
Oh my gosh,
isn't it?
I mean, there's retreat centers, and then there's the National Shrine where
right.
just over.
It's true.
I mean, you are bathed in the love of our Blessed Mother.
Yeah, and you know what's beautiful is we have there. I have to say, the main website for Rachel's Vineyard is rachelsvineyard.org. So if you're not from the local area, you don't want to come to Doylestown, there are other retreat sites throughout the world, actually, throughout this country and the world. And it started about 25 years ago with Dr. Teresa Burke and her husband, co-founder Kevin Burke, who actually we're blessed to have as our counselor.
I have to ask an important question. What if you're a man who allowed an abortion to go forward, or you fathered a child and the girlfriend or wife had the abortion without your knowledge? Is there help for them?
Absolutely. We have a team member who is actually, he couldn't stop. It was back in high school, and he's in his 50s now, mid-50s. And even from that time till now, he still is, upset about that. You know, he begged her to keep the baby. She, you know, decided it was not in her, not in her best decision to do that. And it bothered him forever. So we accept men to come. We also encourage the women to bring their current spouse, even though he may not be the father of the aborted child. Because certain things happen in their lives. Like, Victoria, I don't know if you want to mention when you were, vacuuming.
Yeah.
And how there was a...
Yeah, there's... with Catherine, when Catherine was killed, when she was aborted, in the procedure room, there was a canister in the corner. And attached to that was I call it a hose, and attached to that hose was a sharp object. And the doctor took that, and when he switched that on, it reminded me of a shop vac. And when he switched that on, he shoved that up inside of me so far, I mean, I saw stars. Mm. So I don't like vacuuming, if I can help it. My husband actually got me one of those iRobot things or whatever.
Rumbas.
So at least it doesn't sound like a vacuum, but it's, I've now gotten over that, but it's taken me so long. It's like I couldn't figure it out. It's like, why do I hate the sound of vacuuming?
Mm-hmm. So that's an important thing for a spouse to understand.
For me.
And it was a contentious thing, between this man and woman, this husband and wife. Like, why don't you want to vacuum my house?
Is there a sense or a form of post-traumatic stress disorder that becomes a part of this?
Yeah, PTSD is exactly what's happening. They've been traumatized by this experience.
Sure. sure. We have, and there are, certain trigger points. Like I have a friend of mine who's also post-abortive. She had done with a curate, and she can't to this day bother her to hold a knife. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like to carve a you know, meat or something. So we all have, you know, our little trigger points and things like that. But what I want to point out is that with God's mercy and grace, He'll help us to get through that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. You know, I do, yes.
Yeah, so it's...
I want to also, just as we've got about 10 minutes left, talk about the importance of prayer. You may not have been aware of it at the time, but somebody might have been praying for you to meet your future spouse or your current spouse, or to have a breakthrough at the last abortion that you had. And did you ever get the sense that your own children were praying for you, or do you have a better sense of that now, if they've been baptized and are in heaven? And let's talk about the importance of prayer in this vigil, the 40 Days for Life vigil, and mm-hmm. how important it is for us to always keep these women in mind. And I'm sure the Rachel's Vineyard weekends are bathed in prayer, right? I mean, you have partners.
We have 24-hour adoration soon as our retreat begins, or right beforehand. And we have a prayer team that are constantly praying for the people who have been on our past retreats, the ones coming up, and then...
How do you get on that team if a listener would like to join?
Well, they can contact me, you know, by email. And it's just such a wonderful thing. And you feel that... Okay, you might not be physically able to go and be in front of Planned Parenthood to pray there, but surely we appreciate everyone's prayers at all times.
For sure.
Your rosaries are so important to us.
Well, and I want to point out the Abby Johnsons of the world and all of this tremendous success of the 40 Days for Life, this expose of what is actually happening in these abortion mills, has come about through mercy and prayer.
Yes, it has. I go down to... first up with Evelyn, as far as prayer is concerned, I now am helping her on the Rachel's Vineyard Retreat by being a prayer partner for a person. So, and it's where I go ahead and I pray for them all weekend, and I give them a letter of love, and Evelyn knows, and then usually they get a teddy bear, just to, you know, sometimes we need to have that, I don't know, just that
physical.
Yeah, actually. And then I usually make a dessert. Yeah, but it's so fulfilling to know that, you know, that
spiritual
I can make
motherhood
a difference.
There.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I didn't think about that. But
what you're explaining is, so I welcome the people that have been to our retreats to come back and then give, mm-hmm. you know, in their way. Either it's to pray or to come and help with meals, to bake things. I mean, there's so many aspects. So if they contact me back, there's certain, and that's how our retreat team has grown exponentially.
Oh yeah.
So that if there's a particular team member who can't make it, I have a wonderful group behind them that would be willing to step in, you know, and do what they can to help.
I want you to give out the dates for the retreat once more, and then we're going to just transition as we close this segment, talking a little bit about 40 Days for Life.
Okay.
So.
Yes, our next retreat at the Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, is April 7th to the 9th. You can contact me, EvelynWalsh59@gmail.com, to register.
I can't applaud you enough for what you're doing, Evelyn. Thank you so much. And Victoria, oh my goodness, what a wonderful witness. And again, your motherhood is shining through. The idea that you want to help so many young women is a clear sign of how great you are as a mother. So we thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
So let's talk about 40 Days for Life.
Okay.
Let's talk about how people can get plugged into that in the local area. This has just had tremendous results. This idea of the 40, which is very biblical.
Yes.
You know, the 40 days set aside for change or strength or whatever. We know Christ was 40 days in the desert. We're entering into Lent 40 days. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, our 40 Days for Life in Norristown starts on Ash Wednesday, and it's up until April 9th. You can sign up through our website at 40daysforlife.com/Norristown. And then you can go ahead and plug in if you'd like to go ahead and sign up for hours. Our hours will be from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
This is silent witness outside of an abortion.
This is correct. And what we do is we'd like to have two people at the same time. going out to pray, because wherever two or more are gathered in my name, there I'm in the midst also. Mm-hmm. And it's the location is 1221 Powell Street in Norristown. That's the corner of Wood and Powell Streets. And we pray peacefully, you know. We go ahead and pray the rosary. My friend Rita Smith, who is an MEV, Missionaries of the Gospel of Life, she is the one, she headed the one Planned Parenthood in Collegeville, and that closed in 2013. And so now we're doing the one here in Norristown, hoping that that's going to close as well. So, going out there to pray and to be that olive branch and to go ahead and to extend our love to the women that are going in there instead of screaming and yelling at them. If we show them the love, then there's a, you know, we've had babies saved many times. The first time that we did our 40 Days for Life, we had
in Norristown.
Okay. We had six babies saved on Ash Wednesday.
What?
Six babies saved.
How did that happen? Tell me
about it. Well, what happened was, when they're getting ready to go in, and sometimes what happens is we get the opportunity to go ahead and to speak to them, not always, because they have the death squads out there, and, you know, they're like right up in their face. So we had an opportunity. There were two women that had, I talked to them personally, that were trying to change their mind. They were like, they're not sure. And I'm like, before you make a decision, let me go ahead and let me make a phone call. And so I made a phone call to Catholic Social Services. I was able to go ahead and have them go down there, and they were able to talk to them, and we'll even take them down there. Well, Catholic Social Services, they're like on Johnson Highway in Norristown, and they offer counseling. They offer all kinds of support as far as
financial,
medical. Ultrasounds. We also contact Baby's Breath, which is also in Norristown. They're the ones that also offer free ultrasounds, pregnancy tests.
I just say from personal experience, because I have volunteered with Legacy of Life,
that's
you are going to get taken care of. You walk through a women's crisis pregnancy center, it's almost like your best day ever, because there's no need that will not be met by whatever you need. And, you know, you talk about this idea of that, oh, we're so heartless because we don't care about the woman. I've seen women come in with what seems to be impossible situations, that they just put it in the hands of God. And then a year later, they have a baby that they are so in love with and said, this saved my life. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't believe from a year from at the point at which they were making almost a decision for abortion, that this could all work out. They're healthy, they're happy, they're out of abusive relationships, jobs, they're in their own apartments, they're away from all of these negative things that were, their lives are turned around.
Yes,
so I can't say enough about the Women's Crisis Pregnancy Centers. If you have any friend or a coworker or loved one that is on the fence, please, I'm begging to get them to a crisis pregnancy center, because things seem to be so much bigger in your head than they are realistically when you actually sit down and say, here, let's solve this, as you did with the women coming into Planned Parenthood, and you got them to Catholic Social Services. And so many of these things are really just, we'll walk with you through this. We'll hold your hand. We'll walk with you through it.
We'll help you. We'll just give us a chance. You know, we can help you. And, you know, if you look at a Planned Parenthood, either they have iron gates around them, okay, they don't have open windows. And I remember I talked to one woman who I was out there doing a 40 Days for Life, and I was out there, and a woman and her mother came. They were visiting from Washington, D.C. And she said her mom was going in there. She had to take care of some things, I guess, or whatever. I'm not sure exactly. But the daughter and I, we were talking, and she said, well, I'm going to go and check on my mom. I'm like, okay. She came out, and this is as God is my witness, she came out not even 2 minutes later, and her eyes were as big as ever. And I'm like, what's the matter? She goes, oh my gosh. She says, as soon as I walked in there, she says, I saw evil all over the place. Mm. She said they were showing like inappropriate things on television. She said, I just saw all these demons all around. And I'm like,
death chambers.
Yeah. That's why.
The first time I ever witnessed at Warminster, I really felt like this was as close as I could get to the Holocaust in terms of the Auschwitz and this idea that right in front of me legally, mm-hmm. human lives were being taken. And there was literally, what could I do? I mean, I was in tears because I just, the first time I viscerally felt that you see people going in and you see medical waste bags coming out. And it's just so shocking that this is illegal.
I'd like to mention too, it's not the end of the world if you are doing the if a woman has taken that first pill for a chemical abortion and then yes. they've given her the other pills to take at home, you can stop that and reverse it by going to like a NAPRO doctor or
how
some,
soon would they need to do that?
Like within 24 hours, okay. I think you have to get progesterone shots. So right. your local obstetrician, gynecologist might not be familiar with that, but there are ways to reverse that decision. There's an Allentown clinic that a friend of mine is at, and she called me one day, and there's a hotline
reversal
number.
Pill.
I wish I had it with me, but you can reverse that pill.
Yeah. Okay.
And you don't have to continue with that abortion.
So if you started on the medical or surgical abortion procedure, you can get it reversed if you act within 24 hours of
Correct.
Taking the first medication.
Right.
Correct.
And don't take the rest of it.
Yeah, don't take the rest of it.
Because that's creating the environment to start breaking away and really to kill the baby from
right.
within.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the experience of having that chemical abortion and then doing that all alone, perhaps, when, the baby coming out into the toilet and then,
being flushed down.
Well,
it's horrible.
Yeah, and just the solitariness of it all. And the pain
is incredible, yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
There's a man that I know of who was traumatized because his girlfriend, had that experience. He's the one who picked that baby up out of the toilet, put the baby in a Tupperware container, and then buried the child in the yard. I mean, there are just so many. They think they're taking care of it, but
they think it's impersonal.
And the man, yeah. he's been traumatized.
Yeah, yes,
he's been completely traumatized. So
yeah.
that's why men, especially, the fathers who have lost children to abortion are very welcome to come on the Rachel's Vineyard Retreat.
There's no one judging you. There's no one thinking that you're a bad person.
No, especially
because
at our Rachel's Vineyard Retreat weekend.
No,
did you feel the love?
No, I did. I mean, it was like, it was such a non-judgmental environment. It was just like, hugs and, and just all this love. And, you get all these nice little things that are on the bed, when you go to your room. You get like a nice little letter and you get all throughout the whole process. It's all done in love. So, we're surrounded, we're being surrounded by love instead of being surrounded by hate and negativity.
Self-loathing, I imagine.
Correct. And we are being surrounded by mercy and forgiveness, instead of sitting there thinking it's like, oh, how am I ever going to, nobody's ever going to forgive me, and they're judging me. No, they're not. Mm. They're not.
Set yourself free. Be not afraid.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Amen. Isn't that what Jesus said? Amen. Amen. I say to you.
St.
John Paul II said, be not afraid.
Oh, whoever is heavy burdened.
Yes. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light.
He's right there walking.
He is.
He wants to walk with you. Well, thank you so much, ladies. This has been such an educational hour here. We've been speaking with Evelyn Walsh, the director of Rachel's Vineyard Retreats at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa, and Victoria Nowy, who is representing Silent No More with a wonderful testimony.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to get in touch with Evelyn, she's given out that number, but you can also call us here at Holy Spirit Radio if you want any more information. Everything is very confidential. Do not fear that your name is going to be shared with anyone. This is a very, very confidential process, and I think the Silent No More and Rachel's Vineyard respect your privacy.
Absolutely.
With the utmost concern and delicacy. Well, thank you, ladies, for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having us.
Soon again.
Thank you.
Okay.